So, first of all, I would like to thank you all for this wonderful acoustic and visual experience that we were able to follow during the last hour. We have a conversation now between our musician, Sandeep, and between our physics performers, as one possibly could state it. And since the whole evening is somehow under the umbrella of the notion of experiment and of experimentation, I would like to start to address a question that goes in that direction to both of you, and I start with you. You have been, Sandeep, you have been talking about a system of improvisation that you have been using and indeed actually building up while working on these music pieces. So my question would be, if you try to conceive of the practice and of setting up this musical system, what and where do you think the moment of the experimental comes in?
I think the first step in this kind of composition always is to look at the infrastructure, the surrounding network of affordances, of techniques, technologies, and of the situation in a public space, in an audience space, and to define it in a circumscribed way. So not unlike an experimental lab, it's not a given that musicians would stand on stage, it's not a given that audience would be sitting. All these elements of a performance have to be defined before the piece can actually become anything like music. And once you define this very controlled and conscious setting, the setting itself dictates certain rules, certain approaches that you can take. So certain kinds of music become possible, others do not become possible. I can describe this in another project that I'm currently working on, which is a bodysuit score, meaning a dress that contains and transmits information to musicians while they walk in space, in an open space, in a city urban space. And in this, it's obvious that the score itself is not useful to transmit the kind of information that an orchestra musician in an orchestra hall would need. There are very different kinds of information entities that can be relayed to such a musician that a musician of this kind can react on. And this is the experimental setup. We're currently experimenting with this kind of thing. From the very basic ergonomic design to the distances, the kind of qualities that can be transmitted to a musician. And only once we know all these things, then we can start thinking about the music itself. So the music comes from not an idea, a poetic idea necessarily, although the entire setup might be a poetic idea, but it comes from a juxtaposition of conditions. And that's the experiment. That's, for me, is the experiment.
And now, to state it a little bit provocatively, where is the experimenter?
I think the experimenter is the listener. Because in such a setup, There are many sources of music, if you want to say it like that. There are many sources of expression and sources of non-expression, creation and non-creation. And the experiment, the site of the experiment is the listener. So what kind of things come together in the listener to create a specific experience that's unlike another? That's, for me, is the interest.
But on the other hand, you have also this kind of interesting phenomenon, if I understood correctly what you are doing with this kind of music, that that there is a strange way of... So you have a player who is starting to use his or her instrument in a particular way, and the result of this is being taken up by an external relay, which is the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he plays back according to the input that he gives and that he is going to transform. And I say not it, I say he. plays back what has been produced, and you have to react to it. So you create a kind of iterative circle that is going on, and the question now would be, is what at each and every of these steps you achieve, is this lost on stage, or once performed, or do you have ways or ideas of how all these outcomes are, in a way, fed back into the ongoing process of music creation?
There are two aspects to this. The first is that the system itself is constantly evolving. So whatever happens in one concert will make the system evolve in the sense that we rework it, re-establish new links, new possibilities. The other thing, of course, we can document it. That's obvious. I think this concert tonight has been recorded, and so on. And this affords us opportunities to listen back to past reactions. But I think the most important change happens also in the performing musicians, in the... It's really like a complex system where you cannot say this is the point where something happens. It happens at every point, and every location in the system creates new situations that influence all the others. So Navid, who is on the computer during the performance, does not create the music, but he can influence the state of the system and surf on it in a sense. That will change what Felix can play and Julian can show on the score. So all these, and each of them can manipulate, most obviously, of course, the player of the trombone, but that's not the only manipulation that's possible.
So I think I switch to my right side and actually address more or less the same question to you. Where does the experimental come in what you are doing? If somebody, I have been sitting there in the chair and looking at what is going on there, and my first impression was, it is not a firework but a waterwork. There is kinds of so these kind of movements that you create on your liquid. Result in movements from which you do not exactly know to what extent you are mastering them, or to what extent you just give an input and then let things go. So if you could kind of expand a little bit about this idea of experimentality in your own work. And maybe also compare it to the physical the laboratory work of the physicist in Paris with whom you are interacting.
Well, certainly, I think here it's important to recall the words of German philosopher, phenomenologist Edmund Husserl. There exists a veritable abyss of meaning between the observer and the observed. And it's this abyss that leads to the kind of non-linearities that you're referring to the kind of, to the capacity to, on the one hand, control or prepare the conditions of a system, and then to allow that system to guide you elsewhere to completely unfamiliar terrain. So the experiment, on the one hand, is a series of parameters, of conditions that should be taken rather rigorously in order to later emancipate oneself from these conditions. I guess the as it has been called, freedom within discipline.
I also would like to add that we are not enamored with the formalism of scientific experiments from which we're borrowing this terminology of an experiment. We are mostly interested with content of contemporary science because we find it much more exciting than its formalisms and its rigor and the procedures that sometimes scientists are forced to follow to go on with their research. Luckily, we are free, so we can take this amazing content and be very playful with it. And as Dmitry mentioned, yes, this abyss of meaning, we're always giving meaning to things. We cannot stop doing that. And we always choose extremely exotic phenomena, something that you as a viewer would see for the first time in your life, such as sonoluminescence or acoustic levitation, as in this case. So we would like to take our spectator into this levitating state where the meaning is not so present, and at least for a few moments, you can be hanging there without any meaning, and from there, this abyss of meanings emerges.
I just wanted to respond to the inquiry about Yves Couder, who we also mentioned during our talk. He's a fluid physicist, but he has ventured into domains of cosmology and astrophysics in the same exact kind of liquid environment as you saw earlier. And that's also an aspect of the experiment, as you mentioned before, that comes after the fact, that dawns on someone when this moment of elucidation has taken place. But while it is happening, indeed, as Evelina mentioned, the most exciting part is this incapacity to define.
Okay. Would you like to react to what our two artist physicists have been presenting?
Yes. I was very impressed with what I saw. And I had two thoughts. One was, of course, the question of mediation. All we see are mediated images. We don't see what happens behind the screen, but if the screen were not there, we couldn't see it. So it becomes a media event, it becomes a movie, a live broadcast. And as such, it is a kind of visual, there are visual memories of this kind of thing, experimental films, abstract films since the 1920s, that come to mind when you see this, where also there was a suspension of meaning, but at the same time, the abstract film created a kind of temporal structure that created meaning, like in music. So it was it's very similar to this kind of image, and you actually can't forget what happens. You sort of, whatever you do behind the screen is a kind of magical black box, and the thing we see are movies. That's one question, and the second one is, I really like about what you do, because it recalls us a very early phase of scientific discoveries, the gentleman natural scientist who performs experiments in the parlor.
Natural philosophy, natural as it was
philosopher,
called.
Yeah, not natural philosopher. And the amazement and the wonder of these kind of parlor experiments is certainly a great part of what you do. So it's a theatrical event too. But I don't know if that speaks to you in any way. But I
No. It certainly speaks to us very loudly.
And of course, reference to visual music from the 1920s by Oscar Fischinger is exactly. Very, very relevant. Mm-hmm. Although he did with different means, but of course, we love this kind of work, and we're very much influenced by it.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are perhaps no bounds to the purity of abstraction, and one could reach ever further domains of abstraction without necessarily, once again, inviting this rigidity and these at times very challenging circumstances.
Another reason why we get a little bit help from video. Live video feed is because we are extremely interested in coming back to the question of time in the micro time. So there are, of course, extraordinary scale of temporal delineations. So the micro time, the micro world, acts on super high speeds. And then, of course, you have geological time scales that are of totally different magnitude, and it is in micro world that the highest speeds and the highest energies that we are familiar with you can find. And we are very often asked by curators and people from the art world, why don't you do big works, why do you upscale your works? But it is this interest in micro world that gives you access to this hyperspeed time, to this hyperspeed interactions that makes us so excited. And that's the world we want to uncover. That's the world that usually goes unnoticed and that quantum physics gives us some kind of narrative about, but a very phasey one. So in this particular piece, we're working on its next step, where we can use the laser that was illuminating the droplets to create a simultaneous projection in order to upscale it and to remove the media of film. Mm-hmm. We're still working on it. It's not an easy task, although we have a piece where we use white laser to project directly from soap membranes. So we don't use any video or any projectors. So this is kind of a next step, but in the interim, we have to use video as a kind of visual aid.
Okay. No, oh, I'm sorry. I just was going to say that with regard to the Pandora's box over there, that's not how we would have preferred to do it. it would have been our choice for all of you to be here on stage and to be able to see it with the naked eye. There were other, should we say,
safety regulations,
security considerations. Yes, yes. Yeah. But would it be correct to say that what you are after is, in one way or the other, to make the quantum world visible, which would be a kind of a contradiction in itself, at least to the classical idea of that there is no macroscopic quantum description, although there are theoreticians now, and I know a group, I think at the University of Aachen, who is just trying to do that.
macroscopic quantum phenomena over the course of a mere decade have become quite the news in physics communities, and for that matter also in these totally new fields such as quantum biology or quantum astronomy. Up until quite recently, it was believed that indeed the quantum world is reserved for totally microscopic domains, but we find out now that everything is quantum, that the entire universe is one big quantum entanglement. Our capacity to access these states hasn't been
fully developed.
Right.
But we have quantum processes underlying all our existence, so we have them inside of our bodies. Mm. That's how our vision operates. Yeah. We should be able to get access.
Let us talk about quantum phenomena in our mind. I think the suspension of meaning is one of them, and that's actually, if I understood you correctly, that is what we call wonder, is the suspension of meaning, and it obviously plays an important role in the in how you create this experimental setup, as it were. Yeah? It wouldn't work if you would determine everything from the start, although you have very, very defined boundary conditions, but these boundary conditions are just chosen in a way so that the suspension of meaning can occur. And I think this should be also, or if I understood you correctly, this lies a little bit also behind the idea of your musical creations, that you're not playing a melody, you are working with particles that in themselves do not carry a particular meaning. And they become organized in sequences that start to interact with each other, and out of this possible meaning arises, but it is not put into, it comes out of. Would that be okay?
Yes, you could hear in the last piece that was played before you came on, the long elegiac piece.
Yeah.
You could hear waves of sound that sort of sloshed around in the room. These were actually microparticles, extremely accelerated particles of what the musician was playing. So a long melody became a very short, compressed particulate matter. What interests me about this is that we do not hear it. We hear the acceleration up to a certain point. For musicians, that's always very interesting, up to which point something remains recognizable as, for example, a temporal phenomenon, and at which point the temporal phenomenon creates a perceptual entity that then is slow again. So high speed is slow in music. If everything is at high speed, we feel that it's moving very slowly. There's always a medium time that we can, where we can understand phenomena like acceleration or retardation, as you call it, retardando.
It's just like high-speed photography.
Yes,
allows us to observe things in slow motion.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think our time is more or less up, and I got just a sign that we should put an end to our conversation, but I think a fair summary would be that we are creating our worlds out of particles that are devoid of meaning.